This is the Red on Red podcast on redfm.ie.
This week on the podcast, we're talking with musician, sonic improviser and arts facilitator Dan Walsh.
To save myself, grief of dreaming, keep my eyes on and let's see.
So freezing.
Sky Horse and Death with Fleeting Glimpses, and Sam Perkin with an excerpt of new work in Waves. This is Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast, dropping every Wednesday via redfm.ie, as well as iTunes, Google Podcasts and other audio platforms. My name is Mike McGrath-Bryan, nursing a slightly sore throat this week after a weekend of shouting and roaring at Townlands Carnival. And if you're also in need of a bit of a break, we've got something for you right now. For the next hour or so, we're going to be joined in studio by Fixity / The Great Balloon Race / The Bonk musician, Cork Improvised Music Club facilitator and music teacher, general music man, Dan Walsh. Dan, how's it going, buddy?
Not too bad, Mike. Thanks for having me on.
You've had a busy weekend of it thus far. While it's been kind of busy enough down here regarding festivals this weekend, next week, you were on the road last week up the country with The Bonk. How did that play out for you?
Oh, it was great. It's always a lot of fun. Always.
Where were you off to this weekend?
We were playing in the Thomas House in Dublin on Friday with Strength and Junior Brother.
Is that how Strength NIA is pronounced? Just Strength?
I don't know.
Because he always builds himself a Strength NIA and he just refers himself as Strength.
I don't know. I like just saying Strength.
I mean, it's a great
it's just
band name.
Such, I don't know, yeah. I don't know. It makes sense to just say Strength, I think. I don't know. I read it as Strength NIA and I say it as Strength.
As Strength, yeah. And I think, does he say it as Strength as well?
I think so.
Yeah.
I feel like that.
It's an odd one.
Yeah.
But you're not too far removed from festival season yourself. Yeah. Your ensemble, the Council for the Dark Arts Orchestra, just finished the Bulmer stage over at Body and Soul. We were talking to Mr. K about it a couple of weeks ago. Yourself, you were kind of the organiser of the whole deal. What's it like to kind of corral 15 to 18 different musicians at any one given time and lead them in that kind of musical conversation?
It's fairly mental. Like, it is full on kind of organising it, just kind of keeping in touch with that many people coming running up to something, trying to make sure that everybody knows what they need to know in order to be able to relax when they get there. You know, that's like, because that's the level I wanted at. So if I can't, or it's pressure. It's something. It was completely unknown to me, like doing things like this and like organizing things with that many people at least. And it just kind of, it just happened, and now it's happening, and now it's happening for all of us.
And is there going to be more of it happening?
Absolutely, yeah.
Unreal.
It's kind of, I think it's. That's one of these projects that is now ongoing, you know, and I don't see ends to these things.
We'll go a little further into forward-thinking music momentarily, but let's kind of roll it back a little bit to your own musical education. You've been sessioning around Cork City for the bones of over a decade now, really. Kind of take us through your journey into Cork's musical core, shall we say.
Initially, like, I was just playing like up in Mayfield with the lads that were around who were into the same things, my friends and all that. And then like when I started to skate, that's when kind of being interested in music was really like a heavy thing that was like, I don't know, it became even more fruitful because it was all just people from different places that were meeting up to skate. I found that really like excited me. And then when I went to college, or I suppose like when I was gigging first, then I was playing with people that were much older than me, like straight away. I was playing blues in bars like when I was like 17, and that was kind of like a schooling. Like, so you'd get a call last minute, didn't know any of the tunes. I'd been playing drums a year, and they're like, "Do you know a Texas Shuffle?" And I'd say, "What's a Texas Shuffle?" And they'd say, "Both hands," and count off the tune, and you have to go.
Yeah.
So it was really like, early on, it was just fairly like, kind of, let's just, we have to play now. It's time to play. Let's play. You know.
And that's going to really beat the discipline into you regarding, you know, not only your frame of reference and the amount of skills that you kind of take on, but also, you know, your flexibility. Like, having that amount of, I suppose having that amount of versatility as a player, or being able to kind of understand the vernacular enough to give people what they want, is going to inform your style of play then when you transition over to original music and jamming with other people. And I mean, you play in a lot of different projects, but you've always played in a lot of different projects. You've as long as I've known you, as long as I've seen you at shows, you've always been kind of hectic with four or five other projects.
Yeah.
Kind of, how did you transition out of that scene and into playing original music around Cork City circa your college time?
I was always kind of, I didn't really matter what I was doing once I was playing. I didn't really think, like, if it's original music, that's more worthwhile, or like playing the other stuff is more worthwhile, because all of it was just trying to learn from it.
Mm.
You know, so like every musical situation, I was just trying to eat up what I could out of it and be playing. And it was important to not wait till I was finished college to think of myself as a working musician.
Yeah.
For me. Because, I don't know, it was just like, if you wait around thinking you're going to be ready, you're never going to be ready. So it's always time to get the head down and just try and learn and keep going. So that was always the incentive of like playing in different groups, because you get different perspectives from everybody and whatever, you get different challenges from different styles. And even if you're playing music that's not original, you can get into the tradition and learn such deep things from like the traditions that you're playing. Even if it's like pub gigs playing blues, you get really deep stuff out of that if you study the music. So it's about, like, there's value in all of it. And then I suppose as I started to have my own ideas, I was more kind of like curious about what I could make with other people, you know, and like kind of more focused on that. And the Great Balloon Race was kind of a thing for that. Like, I was pretty much like a player, like a working player musician, like just kind of not writing or anything.
Yeah.
Or involved in writing. And the lads like just like asked me to go for a jam, and I had time, and they seemed really cool. Even though I knew Paddy Cullen, I didn't know the other two lads, but that was kind of like in my head, that's like the start of kind of being like, oh, things can be real nice. Yeah. And you can be real free and like not worry about, all right, that means you can not worry about a lot of things, you know. So that was kind of like, boom, more curiosity then, you know, in a different direction. Like,
and indeed you have taken your curiosity in different directions while maintaining that session player mentality. Among other outfits that you sessioned for around the Cork scene would have been Dearly Departed, Shoegazers, Elastic Sleep. How did that come about? And what was it like to kind of drop in as that band was kind of beginning to garner momentum for themselves? I mean, they had put out Leave You by the time you just started playing with them. Just kind of takes into your experience playing with Muireann and the lads.
It was like a really great thing to do, because I learned an incredible amount from it. Because I was going into a band that like was, the concept was fully like formed and pretty much realized and like ready to go, so I was joining like after the concept, you know what I mean? So that was something new to me and that I learned from. And like, yeah, how I got into it was I was playing loads of music with the lads, you know, and we were jamming, and like just in a totally natural way, like that, you know. It's just like we were all not in college together as such, but we were all around the same kind of stuff at that time. So it was like, yeah, it was a really natural thing. And like, it was really, it kind of grew, and the record happened very fast, and that was like very exciting, you know. And the gigs were completely different to a lot of gigs I've done, you know. So yeah, it was valuable thing.
That experience would go on to inform what you've done subsequently with improvised music, with bands like Fixity, Not Earth, etc. And we'll talk about that in just a wee while. But first off, Dan, you've selected a playlist for us for this week's episode. And coming up first, you have Catherine Sikora with Speedbag Swivel.
Yeah, Catherine Sikora is an expert saxophonist and someone very important just in general in terms of improvisers. She's a big deal, you know.
It's kind of a bit mad that she's been gigging around Cork as of late. Wasn't she supporting Damo Suzuki?
Yeah, I mean, like, and I hope he was supporting her too.
We hope that everyone supports any Cork resident musician listening to this podcast. Declan Sinnott also coming in with Soft Container. This is off of a succession of experimental, improvisational and field recordings that he has made in the past number of years, really. He's been kind of doing it at a slow pace.
Yeah, I think it's just incredibly it's like really experiential music to listen to.
Mm.
And it's amazing how some of it can be, can feel so, so incredibly human, given the tools that he's using.
Yeah.
It's just like something that makes, it just massages my brain. Like, I love it.
We'll subject you to a brain massage momentarily, but first, this is Catherine Sikora with Speedbag Swivel here on Red on Red.
Thank you.
Declan Sinnott with Soft Container here on Red on Red. We're back in studio with Music Man Supreme, Dan Walsh. And before we went to music, we were talking a little bit about your time with Elastic Sleep, Great Balloon Race, and other projects that were educational to you. Sorry. And other projects that were important to your development as a musician. The next step has arguably come forth with you being at the head of both collaborative and individual project Fixity, which began as sonic exploration with different collaborators, then a rotating group of collaborators and even differing lineups,
yeah.
And now even the introduction of a solo show, which we'll see at Mallow Arts Festival this weekend at 3 p.m. on the 28th at St. James's Church. But how did you happen across Fixity in the first place? Because it's never like you go out with the grand intention of doing something big.
I think it was just like an accumulation of learning from different band leaders and just kind of like finding different ways that things were done. And then from that, kind of whittling down the ideal for me, you know? So it's like each person would have a way that they'd see it that would align with their kind of like musical approach, you know? So as an improviser, it's kind of a problem that you have to figure out to try and, or like, you know, it's a question that you have to figure out, like how much complete and utter freedom will there be, and how much like guided compositional force will there be. So it was kind of like this thing where I just wanted a situation in which everybody could bring what they had, and I wanted to set up something where like there was kind of enough information to retain compositions and then enough room for everybody to very much be able to get what they need to say out of them, you know, and just encourage others. So it was very like group minded, you know. It was the intention the whole time was to try and form this kind of like this group that would be changing, would be fluid, but would retain this concept, and that people could be welcome in and out of when they were available, this kind of thing.
And how has that kind of worked out for you? And that obviously a lot of musicians around you are very busy, and aside from their own projects have everything else kind of in mind, to the point where you've retained, you know, a succession of regular musicians. You have obviously your lineup of collaborators from Sweden that we'll talk about in a wee bit, but has it been difficult to kind of hang on to people for extended runs of shows, etc., coming from the Cork scene, for example?
There's just a lot of people that I want to play with as well, so it's like there's not really a huge amount of pressure, let's say, on the musicians to have to be there, because I'll work with whatever's there, you know. Like we've done setups where it's been just like organ, sax and drums, no bass, no guitar. So it's just like there's different configurations that we can do, so I'll make it work, you know. And like it doesn't, the way the music is written, it doesn't require a specific instrumentation, and that's really important to me. So like I can adapt it and know for sure that it's never going to be the same twice, you know, and just be comfortable with that and admit that, and just like it kind of gives the surprise back at us, you know. It's like we're as surprised as the audience is at any given event, you know.
And having developed a solo show that takes the, you know, the idea to its logical conclusion that music can work in any kind of context that it's provided. How do you boil it down to absolute zero within yourself as a performer and as a composer for a solo event?
I play the tunes, you know. So I've written all these tunes that they go into this thing called Fixity, and then once those tunes are being played, as far as I'm concerned, that's Fixity, you know.
That's what it is.
And it's once that concept of kind of like, you know, it's interesting with the solo thing, because I'm completely obsessed with interaction, and that's like the thing that that's what I'm chasing, and that's what brings me to the places where I want to go, you know. Yeah. But the solo thing is, it's interesting because I'm basically just interacting with instruments.
Yeah.
You know, and what they give back to me, or I'm interacting with some machines, and what can I get back out of them? It's a different type of interaction. So it's a completely new thing for me. It'll be my second ever show on my own in any context ever. So it's interesting. And again, like, I'm just interested to see what I can learn from it.
Speaking of collaboration, though, you have a regular ongoing collaboration with some jazz musicians in, is it Malmo?
And yeah, they're based in Malmo, yeah.
Emil Nerstrand and the lads.
Yeah.
How did that come together in the first place? And how do you kind of pursue that working relationship kind of with the distance that's involved?
We just play together every possible time that we can because we love playing together. And that's fundamentally how it's possible. You know, they want to play as much as I want to play. There's people in Ireland that are involved in Fixity and they want to play, you know, and like, that's really inspiring for me because it's like, I have so much respect for these people and I'm huge fans of theirs, you know, and like, whether that's anybody who's involved, you know, and anybody I work with, I'm just really excited by all these people. Like, so that kind of, that will encourage you to just get it done, you know.
Yeah.
And with Emil in particular, we've been playing together for years, you know, and we play, yeah, we just play as much as we can, and it's definitely always like two or three times a year we'll get together in either Cork or Malmo, and it'll be jazz gigs or it'll be Fixity gigs, you know, and we'll just get it done so that we can play together, because it's just an important musical relationship that we have to preserve, and nobody else is going to tell us it's important, so yeah, just get it done.
The lads appear on Fixity's first formal studio album, and I say formal studio album because there's been a number of capturings and recordings of live sets prior. There's been a number of self-recorded albums, kind of numbered more so than named, before The Things in the Room was released on double album via Albert Toomey's Penske label. What is the difference, I suppose, between knowing that you're going to make something rough and ready and then at the same time bring in the core ideas behind earlier compositions and placing them in a quote-unquote final form for a double LP with these musicians? What does that say to your attitude as to whether or not a song is finished or not?
A song is finished when you're finished playing the song. And if you commit from the start and you're committed until the end, then you've played a song, you know? That's as far as I'm concerned. And like, those are compositions that existed that the lads like Niels Anderson and Friedrich Persson, who I literally met the day before we recorded that Emil sourced to play some Fixity music when I got to Sweden. And those guys took it into their own hands and like played absolutely the way that they play. And like, it was my role to make sure that they knew that they were allowed to do that and that we enjoyed it. And once that was happening, we just needed to play, and we just did each tune, did one take, and that was it. And we know, I mean, like, I say before we play that it's going to be one take. We know that it's one take. You know, everybody knows that you get that amount of time. So as long as there's a complete take, that's it, you know. And that's really exciting. And it's exciting to just step back when you're done and value that amount of time that you just spent on the earth doing a thing, you know, and just consider it valuable and walk away.
Was there any edits taken to it, or was it all one take?
No,
one take down?
Yeah, it's live. Yeah.
That's what you want.
Yeah, it's a band playing. Yeah, it's just like, yeah, it's the way I love to do it, because of that, you can't question yourself. You just gotta go. You gotta be okay with what just happened.
And how was it to work with Albert on the release of Things in the Room?
It was amazing. Albert's like someone I have huge respect for. You know, like, give a man a kick. Him being like responsible for that happening is responsible for a lot of why I got so excited at a certain age about thinking that Irish people can do this shit too, you know, like, we can just do this too. And it's so powerful. And I was like listening to After Driving, and then I heard Give a Man a Kick, and I was just like, this is happening everywhere, you know. That was really important. And then years later, finding out that Albert was kind of like egging them on and just like making sure that that happened, and then for him to want to support something I'm doing was like a really big deal for me. It was just like super spaced out trying to think about it, you know, just like weird.
It's one of the things where you think about it too much, it would freak you out.
Yeah, it's just cool though. I'm just delighted. Like, it's so, he's really like a champion of like people that need that just little thing that will just like really, really help them. And he just thinks that it's nothing. Like, you know, he's like, yeah, sure, what else would I do? You know? And that's like, he's super excited about stuff. And when you're working really hard, you kind of forget to get excited.
Yeah.
Because you're just like, what's the next thing? You know? Mm. But then someone kind of grabs you and goes, here, listen, I really love this and I'm going to help. So it's just kind of, yeah, it's really, it was a great thing to happen. Like, you know.
Every scene needs an Uncle Albert, really. And we are really lucky to have him.
Hey, some lad.
In Cork City.
Fairness.
When we come back, we'll be talking a little bit about other directions in music, to directly paraphrase Fixity's tagline. But first, we go to more new music. You've got Arthritis, the man from Lucon 5, with a tune of his called Owls.
Yeah, this is, it's a really beautiful piece of music, and it's from a collection that you can get on Bandcamp. It's called The Worst Of. And he's got so much music coming out of him. It's really like, and he's ever changing, and it's just really, it's interesting to watch, and it's really it's inspiring.
And you've got Morning Veils with Lily.
Yeah, this is, it's a really beautiful song from their album Her Kind. I was very, very lucky to be involved in recording, just putting some mics in front of them. And trying to just capture it, and it was like something I'll never forget.
Was there much quote unquote production involved?
Just letting, like, it's always just making sure people know that they're allowed to be themselves, and then you make sure that it's recording, and then just take it away.
The magic of the moment, man. Yeah. Some Morning Veils there momentarily, but first, Arthritis with Owls here on Red On Red.
Thank you.
Morning Vales with Lily here on Red, still joined in studio by Dan Walsh. And Dan, early on in the discussion we were talking a little bit about your time with the Great Balloon Race and how you kind of slipped into their kind of psyche, fuzzy, jazzy world from that of sessioning, and that's been a real constant throughout your body of work, has been appearing with the Great Balloon Race.
Yeah.
Last year they put down their second LP, Gently, which is a tape release via Can't Cope. What's it been like working with the lads, first of all, and then kind of on a secondary note, what was doing their second album like this time with them, and what were the differences between then and now, etc.?
I really love making music with those guys. It's really like, it's a very easy band for us all to be in. And we kind of, yeah, we're all like kids and excited when we're playing together. It's just like, yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. Making that album was like, yeah, it was a big thing for us because we just had this batch of tunes that we knew was ready, and it was just all ready, and we just decided, okay, we'll book this week and we'll do it. And I recorded and mixed it up, and we just tracked it all in a week, and it was like, it was really intense getting it done in that way, because it was our kind of, our ideas about it, we could hear a lot of music for that album. We knew that like we had a lot coming out of us at that time, so, and we just had fairly solid ideas about how we could achieve it. And then yes, we went in and did it in a week, and then it got done kind of in its own time, you know. I had to basically learn how to mix, and went through like two computers in the meantime, this kind of thing, like normal kind of like real life album making business, you know, where it's like, oops, back to the start. Okay.
Oh no.
Still making an album. Everything is all right. You know.
Just back to the start.
Yeah, this kind of thing. But so yeah, it was really like a big steep learning curve for me. Kind of like the recording of the album was just so much fun. Like we just, you know, we got really serious and we got really, you know, equally giggly. But it was like pretty like we were determined to do it and we knew what we were going to do. And then mixing it was like, yeah, it was a process of just learning, like huge amount of learning. And like equally we kind of knew we knew what we wanted it to be, and that was the first thing that we did. So the recording was that,
yeah,
you know. And then it was just about making sure that the ideas carried through and that you could hear everything.
Mm.
And I just had to learn how to do that and did that. And since then, we've just been writing so much more music. We're going to record another one soon, or maybe like two or something. I don't know. There's a lot of tunes there.
I was about to say, like, working with that group of people where you know that there's that kind of security can be the best thing in terms of dragging all those ideas out of you.
Yeah.
And kind Absolutely. Of putting them together. That's been another constant in your body of work, and it's one that has informed your forays into art facilitation as well as improvisation. You are at the helm of the Cork Improvised Music Club, which is a monthly excursion into improvisation featuring different, I suppose, lineups of Cork improvisers, different Cork improvisational outfits, soloists, and so forth. From my recollection, it kind of filled the void that was left by the demise of the drone noise and improvisation scene from the Roundy maybe about 7 or 8 years ago, and before that Set Lab, etc., kind of transmuting its location to Gulf Cafe first of all before kind of returning to that scene's spiritual home in the Roundy.
Yeah.
What kind of gave you the idea to go ahead with Cork Improvised Music Club, and what's been your take on the musical outfits that have resulted from its development as well? As
there's like, it just came from a need to do it, and I needed for it to be happening, and I wanted to be able to go and see gigs that were like that, and just kind of, yeah, decided that I would sort it out with Jimmy, that we'd try it. And then, like, Jimmy Horgan from Plugged Records, and kind of like through a combination of Jimmy's enthusiasm about it and my need for it, it like has kept going, and it's really been kind of like both of us. Like, if I, yeah, I don't know, it's like it's important to have people who are kind of on your shoulder going, yeah, you're right, this does need to happen, you know. And just kind of being like, oh, it's okay, like we'll figure it out and we'll get it done, because I see the value in this also, you know. And since, I mean, it was going in Gulped for like six years or something. First it was weekly, then it was monthly, then it was weekly again. And like loads of different groups have come in and out of it, like, and loads of different groups that were either pre-existing and still exist or started then and have stayed, like, realized kind of on the night that, oh my god, this is a band, we just didn't know it until now, you know. And that, it was amazing to see that happen to myself and to other people in equal measure, I think. And also just seeing some people who literally come together and the first conversation they have is a musical conversation because they have never met before.
Yeah.
And things like that. I mean, it was hugely like fruitful, you know. It was really a beneficial thing for me anyway. I just saw so many amazing things happen, and it was kind of just dragging me along, like, okay, yeah, I'll make sure that happens, because whoa, all these people are like making amazing noises, and it's really exciting. And, you know, finding out more about themselves and everybody else finds out at the same time, so it's really, yeah, it's just a fascinating thing that I love. And it's kind of, yeah, just trying to keep it going.
What was your take then on the departure of Gulped Cafe and the subsequent need to rehome Cork Improvised Music Club? Obviously to be taken away from a home from so many musicians over 5-6 years, you know, obviously a lot of public discourse surrounding the circumstances of its closure. No use in kind of talking about that now. What's done is done.
Yeah.
What was your take on having to leave that home? Was there a consideration of kind of winding it down? And how have you taken back to going back to the roundy for it?
Basically, when Jimmy found a new home, he just called me and he was like, let's go. We'll just pick up again because it's a deal. We got a deal, you know? And it was just like, I call him Commissioner Horgan because he just calls me and tells me, okay, yeah, we got to do this thing. This happens, you know?
Unreal.
And it's kind of like that. It's like, there's a deal in place. We're doing this thing. Yeah. It's about making sure people don't forget to do the things that they want to do, you know? There was no question about keeping it going, really. It was just about when and where, you know?
One of the regular recurring bands to have emerged from the primordial improvisational soup of the Cork Improvised Music Club has been Not Earth, with yourself, Darren Keane, and other collaborators working together. What has it been like to see the development of Not Earth away from Cork Improvised Music Club and to see it kind of spring off into its own thing as an attraction for gigs at festivals and outside of Cork City?
Yeah, I mean, me and Mr. K and Dave Mahuna booked a gig together at Cork Improvised Music Club because we just wanted to try that and see what would come out of it. And it just happened, like, you know, it was a really good thing that we all just like wanted to try, and then we were really excited about it while it was happening and before it was happening, and then after it happened we were still really excited, and then we were just like, okay, this is just a band, when are we going to play again? And then we met up one evening and made an album that evening, and then we're like, okay, better do more gigs. And then we did that again recently and we're booking more gigs, you know? So it's just like keeping it going and kind of just making sure that it sounds like us three. And I think that's the main goal. It's like, once it sounds like those three people playing heavy music, you know?
And heavy music is correct. I mean, like, you get such intensity out of one another, and just seeing you in action where one person takes the lead, seeing the level of focus in each of your eyes as you're playing is something that is, you know, truly a sight to behold. Yeah. But like the term free hardcore that you have adopted for yourselves, I mean, there's no more apt really a descriptor of the Not Earth sound. Does a new album kind of follow on in that direction, or?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, yeah, it kind of does. It's that's the buzz. I mean, I like these genre things because, like, they're all really vague, you know? I mean, hardcore, who knows what hardcore really is? Who knows what, like, free music really is? Like, you know, at this stage in the game, those words are for us to put together in whatever way we want. So it was like, free hardcore, that'll give us something vague enough. Whatever, it's like, there's elements of those things and we're improvising.
Yeah.
And we just know that it has to reach a certain level of intensity, and that's what we're there for. I mean, Not Earth is that's what that band is there for. It's to try and be as intense as we possibly can and reference all the things that we love while we're doing it, and to not have tunes, you know,
in mind.
But, yeah, like, I mean, we're playing tunes, but we're not gonna go back and do that again ever. So it's completely free, and like, you know, we know for sure that we won't ever play the same thing twice, and that's super exciting because it's just like, yeah, fists first into the future. That's the motto.
Speaking of artists that are getting it done, we got Laurie Shaw, the man with about 70 albums, with a single of his, Jeans.
Yeah, Laurie Shaw absolutely rocks. Like, that's just the truth, and I'll fight any man who says otherwise.
He's some fiend, though. I mean, like, we interviewed him there about 20 or so episodes ago now at this stage, as he was preparing to put out that last record of his. And he was telling me about his next three albums already, and how, like, the sequel to his album prior was going to be a full album cover of the Beatles' White Album.
Yeah.
Like,
he could do that.
He could. It's just that vision when you kind of just wholeheartedly put yourself into something.
Yeah, I mean, like, he's in the business of making music, so he just does it. And I have nothing but respect for that. It's like how often you hear Laurie Shaw talking about himself?
Never.
He doesn't. He just bangs out albums, and you know, he just gets it done. It's so great, you know. And it's at a really high level, you know.
It is.
And he's not letting his like any limitations stop him from doing it. Mm. You know, it's just totally like, it's so inspiring. He's great.
We got Horse then with Reject the Arches, recorded live on Spapeen Phonic.
Yeah, I was at this gig and it was absolutely sick, and I love Horse. Every single one of them knows what to do.
We'll get straight into it. So this is Laurie Shaw with Jeans here on Red on Red.
Oh,
Horse with Reject the Arches here on Red on Red, still joined in studio by Dan Walsh. Before we wrap up for this week, Dan, you've had a busy couple of weeks. I believe you're taking it a little bit easy, but there's still a couple of things to come from four or five different projects at this stage of the game. What's coming up for you?
Yeah, I have that solo show in Mallow on Saturday at the Mallow Arts Festival. And then on Sunday, I'm going to Knockinstocking to play with the Bonk, which I'm really looking forward to, because I always look forward to playing with them. It's a lot of fun. And then some gigs coming up in August and September with Senior Infants. Kind of like going to get on some roads with Senior Infants.
Yeah.
And do some shows.
Jeez, after asking you about four or five bands, I bloody well forgot to get into Senior Infants.
Yeah. They're out there, man.
They are out there, man. I suspect that there's a lack of backstory and available information for a reason.
Yeah, I'm not telling you anything about Senior Infants. No way. And then there's more... yeah, there's Sphixity recordings that are just being finished now.
Ooh.
That will be out sometime soon. The ball is kind of just starting to roll on getting that into the world.
And is this more kind of live in the moment stuff like you've been releasing as an aside?
No, it's another studio recording.
Okay,
so
cool.
It's another full length thing.
Well, that about wraps it up for this week's episode of Red on Red, Cork's new music podcast from redfm.ie. Thank you very much to Dan Walsh, Cork's magic music man, for joining us.
Nice and light.
This week. And thank you very much for listening. If you like what you're hearing, please take the time to subscribe, leave us a review on iTunes and now Google Podcasts, as well as other on-demand audio platforms. Please share this on your social media and make sure to check out the artists featured online or at an upcoming gig. And if you'd like more Irish tunes, please be sure to listen into Green on Red on Sunday nights with Alan O'Donovan for the best of all that is Irish on Cork's Red FM, 104 to 106. Dan, you're leaving us with one of your original muses. As we were talking about earlier, the importance of Out on a Limb Records to you and finding out that the DIY thing wasn't just a construct of other cultures.
Yeah.
You got some waiting room with I Took Some Painkillers.
Yeah, what a band. They're just a job. Like, I love Waiting Room. I just still love Waiting Room. I never got to see them live because I was too young, and I'm always using that to slag Wayne now, which is fun. But they're so great, and like, not, you know,
I hope they reunite just to spite you, to be honest.
Huh?
I hope they reunite just to spite you.
That would be that'd be class, like,
wouldn't it?
I'd go, like, I'd be there, I'd be at that gig going absolutely apeshit.
Make it happen, lads. This is Waiting Room where I Took Some Painkillers. This has been Red on Red, and we'll talk to you next week.
On Red.